Good morning, everyone. This is Rick Davis.
And Leah Larrington.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, a show where we talk about things that everybody's passionate about, but that matter a whole lot more than sports or politics.
Like diets.
Like diet, yes.
ever wonder why it's so hard to stay on a diet?
I was wondering that this morning.
And why so many marriages end in divorce. Or why the makers of Prozac and other antidepressants are raking in billions while the number of people suffering from depression is swelling. In What a Body Knows, Finding Wisdom in Desire, our guest today, Dr. Kimmerer LaMotte, takes a fresh approach to exploring these questions and the issues surrounding them. Dr. Kimmerer LaMotte is an award-winning author, philosopher, dancer, and mother. She's co-founder of Visual Arts, a center for arts and ideas located on her farm in upstate New York. She has a doctorate from Harvard and has taught at Brown and Harvard. And has her previous books include Nietzsche's Dancers and Between Dancing and Writing.
Kimmerer, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Kimmerer, why is it so hard to stay on our diets?
Well, because, as I explained, our diets, when we go on a diet, the whole mentality of going on a diet pits us against ourselves, and in particular against our desire for food as this force within us that we need to control or manage. And once we are in this war against ourselves, we always lose, whether or not we are the winners. So part of what I want to explain and develop in this book is that our desires, even our desire for food, is not actually to blame in making us fat. That actually our desire for food has this tremendous wisdom inside of it, which can guide us to our maximum health and well-being.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Kimmerer, now, I worked really hard to try to understand some of your basic assumptions and premises in the book, and so I want to make sure, and I want to also serve our listeners to make sure that they understand what you're saying. So let's take this matter of eating and obesity. Are you saying that our attempts to discipline ourselves are doomed to failure, but instead, the right way to engage food is to do what my body tells me to do? To eat when my body says eat? I'm not quite following that part.
Yes. Well, part of what I try to do is I look at the cultural phenomenon of a diet, and I try to understand what the assumptions are about that phenomenon. And one of the things we see is that, as I mentioned, we're blaming our desires for food. We're putting ourselves against our desires for food. So what I try to do is to open up a sense of what is it that we actually desire when we desire food? What is it? And actually, if you sort of start to explore what it is when you desire food, you realize that it's not the food itself that you're desiring, but it's actually an experience of nourishing yourself. And if you can shift your experience of your desire in this way and open it up, you realize in any moment that what you want is this experience of being nourished. And that gives you a place of freedom and possibility to ask yourself, what is it in this moment that's going to give me that satisfaction? And you become aware of the fact that it's actually a relationship to food that is going to give you the satisfaction you seek, and not just the food itself. So it's not just that piece of chocolate cake that's going to make you happy, but it's going to be the relationship you cultivate with your own desire for food that's going to make you happy, that's going to give you the pleasure that you're seeking.
Kimmerer, your book is divided into three big areas where we really try to deal with our desires and often struggle. The areas that I mentioned in the introduction, food, the desire for sex, and the desire for some sort of transcendence or spiritual connection.
Yeah.
And so what would you say, by way of overview to our listeners, what would you say our desire, as you said, you know, that our desire for food, if we really explore that, is a desire for nourishment. What would you say is the basic or the underlying desire of the desire for sex and the desire for spirit or transcendence?
Right. The desire for sex, as I open it up in the book, is a desire for the experience of giving and receiving what I call a life-enabling touch. And the desire for spirit is a desire for that sense of vitality and direction and belonging that gets you out of bed in the morning and lets you know that your life is worthwhile. Now, I'd like to just step back a minute and just talk about desire itself.
Mm-hmm.
because the way I develop it is that desire is this impulse that arises in us that moves us towards what we think is going to give us the pleasure or satisfaction we seek. And with this way of understanding desire, it's very dynamic. It's ever-evolving. We're constantly learning about what it is that's going to give us the satisfaction, and we're constantly getting experiences which are shaping our sense of what it is that we want. And so in each one of these three realms, our desire is at work. The other big part of this that's important for us to realize is that in our culture, we have what I call a sensory education that we get, where we learn to think and feel and act as if we were minds living in our bodies. And this is a really big part of what I'm trying to develop here, is awareness of this sort of common sense of ourselves, which we're barely aware that we're getting, but that we imbibe just with our systems of education and politics and economics, where we think of ourselves and minds living in these bodies that we need to control and manage. And if we're doing that, then this becomes a key piece for understanding these desires, where we close ourselves off from being able to experience what I want to call the wisdom in these impulses that are moving us towards the satisfaction we seek.
Okay, well, I want to keep following this because I myself am interested, and for the sake of our listeners, I want to really try to get down to the nuts and bolts here. And so let me see if let's keep following this obesity thing. So I'll try to feedback what you said. So if I overeat, then the reason that I'm doing
would you overeat?
Yes, not in front of people. only
a
privately.
Secret binger.
Yes,
ooh,
okay.
Ooh.
So what you're saying is that I'm really misunderstanding what my body wants.
Yes. We do have these desires in ourselves, sort of erupt. And if we are perceiving ourselves as minds and identifying ourselves as minds, then those desires seem to be to us these unruly forces that we either have to indulge or repress.
Right.
And we don't see that there's much room in here. We either have to go out and eat all that we really want to eat, or we have to just control it. And so we get stuck in this place where there's not a lot of possibility for movement. And I feel like we're never going to win if we put ourselves in that place. So what I want to develop is a way of actually experiencing our desires differently, like opening up a space where we can say, oh, I really do want to eat, but what is it that I really want? And so when we allow ourselves to do this, then our desire begins to reveal its wisdom to us. So, for example, in the case of obesity or eating or our relationship to food, what we want to be able to do is to be able to feel our desires and to allow our desires to evolve in ways which align with our best health.
Okay. I hear those words. I understand the words and the sentences, but I don't know how to act on that. How do I act on that?
That's a good question. And part of what I develop in the book is a practice that can enable you to cultivate what I call this sensory awareness of our bodies as movement. And this is the crucial part, is that insofar as we're experiencing ourselves as minds that need to control these desires, we really can't experience our desires as having this wisdom. So we need to shift our experience of ourselves. And this can be done in a variety of different ways, but I just developed one particular practice in the book. And it's by using our breathing and by tuning into our breathing and by opening up a sense of ourselves as movement through that breathing. So, and once we do that, we can, through this sort of practice of breathing, we can begin to shift our experience of desire and realize that our desire is actually an opportunity for us to be clear about what it is we want.
Well, one part that I would agree with you on is that it makes good sense to me that our excesses are a result of us misunderstanding what it is that we really want or what we need. Now, I would be coming at it from a little different standpoint. I would say that when we overeat, or overindulge in sex or drugs or alcohol, or we overwork, or mm-hmm. we are prideful, You know, I'm a businessman, and I get all hung up in wanting people to think I'm smart and successful and,
right.
you know, all that. I make horrible business decisions at times because I look back on them. I can't tell at the moment, unfortunately.
Right.
But I look back on them and realize how much pride there was, that that was more about me wanting to not be wrong, blah, blah, blah. Here's what I would say. So I'm just contrasting our worldviews here. I would say that that's really a need for God. And
mm-hmm.
so when I'm not willing or able or ready to go to that source,
right.
the craving is still there. And I
right.
go try to find it in all of these other ways that some might call sin. We
right.
can choose lots of words. So I would agree with you on that point. But the part that I'm not getting yet, well, let me see if I can get a response to you on this.
Yeah.
It seems to me that our bodies don't give us wisdom,
mm-hmm.
in my view, but they tell us lies. That if we do what our bodies tell us to do, the bodies will tell us to do certain things, but we end up obese alcoholics with sexually transmitted diseases. Now, certainly this isn't what you're recommending, so I'm not going to, like, beat a dead horse here, but tell me one more time, how can we know what our body is telling us? You mentioned the breathing thing, but tighten that one up a little bit. How does that breathing exercise help me to know what my body is really telling me that I need so that I can go get the right thing that's not going to make me fat and addicted?
Right. I'm going to answer that question. Let me step back one moment to address the spirituality that you just brought up, because I think that's really key. And part of what I wanted to do in addressing all three desires together, food, sex, and spirit, is to show how they're all implicated in our spiritual lives. That the decisions that we're making about on a very small level about what to eat in a given moment, about how we relate to our partners in a given moment, are all part of our spiritual lives. They're all part of the world that we're creating. And so I'm completely with you on that. Then the question of how actually this shift in our desire happens. Let's think about it this way. Our desires, as I mentioned, if we want to think about it as these impulses that are arising in us, are always evolving. They're always changing. And part of what we do as we grow up is we learn how to focus in particular ways. We learn to attend to particular different sensations. We learn to interpret these sort of messages that come up for us. And so what I want us to do is to realize that those desires that erupt in us that seem to be like a desire to overeat or to have sex with the wrong person or, you know, to do something that's going to harm us, they're information. It's information about what we are creating in our lives, and it's information that's telling us that something needs to be addressed in us, that there's some need in us that we are not addressing that we need to address. If we shift to this sense of ourselves, of our desires as impulses in these ways that are arising from the very things we're doing, then the desires, then we begin to realize what the wisdom in those desires is. It's a process. It's not like we can all of a sudden say, okay, this desire has this wisdom and I can see it right now. But it's a process of sort of being open and allowing ourselves to sit with a desire without having to indulge it or repress it. And then figure out what is it that it is telling us about that spiritual need, really. Mm-hmm. You know, that need for nourishment or that need for physical intimacy and love or that need for a sense of vitality and connection and belonging.
Which is a great place to dig in a little bit more. We're almost due for a break here. And I want to dig in more because I have been reading your book for the last week. And
yes.
I, right in the middle of that, I went to the Cheesecake Factory and
oh,
had a big
well.
Piece of Godiva chocolate cheesecake. So when we come back, for the break, I want to talk to you about my thoughts about your book and Godiva chocolate cheesecake. This is Leah Larrington on The Things That Matter Most.
And Rick Davis.
We'll be back in a moment.
Today's graduates face college campuses and a culture that challenge their confidence in the trustworthiness of Jesus and a Christian worldview. In A Faith and Cultural Devotional, Daily Readings in Art, Science, and Life, over 70 Christian thought leaders, scientists, and artists like Dallas Willard, John Eldridge, Lee Strobel, Randy Alcorn, and Francis Schaeffer explore significant ideas, events, and people from a Christian worldview.
And together with Kelly Monroe Culberg, author of Finding God at Harvard, we challenge students to go deeper with Christ and gain confidence in his knowledge of how the world works and how to live with joy and peace. This book is offered in 2 to 3 page readings that fit busy young lives. A Faith and Culture Devotional covers 7 subject areas, one for each day of the week. Students will enjoy reading about science with human genome director Francis Collins, art with painter Makoto Fujimura, and contemporary culture with filmmaker Jody Hassett Sanchez. Here's what one high school junior says about the book. This book took me by surprise. Not once have I found a devotional so full of fascinating information that I find myself telling my friends about it right after I read it. I love that it has truth, real truth, but in bite-sized chunks. With my school schedule, I never have time for heavy theology books to just pick up in my spare time, but this book gives me answers to questions that I frequently hear and can now confidently know how to answer without having to be a studied expert on the subject. Big fan. Faith and Culture Devotional is available in local bookstores or at Amazon.com.
Okay, we're back on The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about cheesecake and the other most important things of life. And, Lael, I think you were going to talk about cheesecake.
Yes, our guest today is Dr. Kimmerer Lamont. She's written a book, What a Body Knows, Finding Wisdom in Desire. And in the first segment, we were talking about how she encourages us to really attune ourselves to what our desires are really telling us. What is the wisdom at the bottom of that? And she mentioned that, you know, really at the bottom of our desires for food is this desire to nourish ourselves, and we need to attune ourselves to that. So as I was saying before the break, I happened to go, it was our anniversary last week, and part of our celebration was a lunch the day after our actual anniversary at the Cheesecake Factory with some friends, Bob and Ann. And to finish off our meal, we ordered a big fat piece of Godiva chocolate cheesecake and four forks. And I was really okay with that, because I thought, I will take my traditional 2 or 3 bites, especially as I'm sharing this dessert, and that'll be a lovely way to end my meal. But I'm telling you, after my 2 or 3 bites, I am so loving the taste of this Godiva chocolate cheesecake that I just keep forking it, and I keep forking it, and it is so good and yummy. And you know, I'm really not, and I had read your book, and I'm not thinking about nurturing myself. I am thinking, this tastes so yummy on my tongue, that combination of that cheesecake, salty and sweet kind of thing, and just the yummy. You talked in your book about how you're a crunchy person. Well, I'm more like your daughter. I'm a soft, creamy, juicy person. I'm just loving the texture and everything about this.
Lael, you're really going on about this. You really loved it.
Well,
this is a work of art.
It was a moment. It was a moment. It was a culinary moment.
Life will be downhill from here.
You know, and I'm just thinking, okay, my body was simply telling me, taste and see that this is yummy, and taste and see again and again and again and again. And so I'm wondering, how can you be sure that your sensory experience is really telling you this other message?
Yes. Well, a couple of things. One is that the experience, how do we know that we're being nourished, or what does it mean to even get the experience of being nourished from our food? And what I develop is the sense that our pleasure has an arc to it. And the practice involved in nurturing ourselves in food is to be able to follow this arc of our pleasure to a sense of enough. And to be able to get to that sense of enough, we have to be in tune with how our bodies are feeling about the particular things we're eating. And it seems like you were definitely in tune with how your body was feeling about that food. And I imagine that there would come a place where your sense of fullness would start to become a discomfort. And then at that point, you would be dealing with a couple of different sensations, namely the sensation of it in your tongue and the sensation of it in your belly.
Mm-hmm.
And the question would be, how do you allow yourself to be open to the balancing of those sensations so that you come to a point where you realize that what you really want from that cheesecake at this moment is just to stop, because you've gotten the pleasure. You followed the arc of the pleasure of it. And sure, you'll be able to have another piece of cheesecake tomorrow or the next day or next week or next anniversary. Happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you.
But that at that moment, you have gotten the pleasure from that. And that to continue getting the pleasure from that cheesecake, you actually need to stop eating it. Maintain that relationship to it that mm-hmm. allows you to feel this sense of nourishment.
Yeah. Yeah, I
How
can
did
remember.
How did you stop eating it?
Yep.
Did you just run it?
But here's what I thought, Kimmer. I thought, okay, you're reaching for this. My real desire is to nurture myself. And I'm wondering, when you say
yes.
that, is that another way of using your mind, what you know about nutrition, to interpret and direct your body's desires? I mean, mixed with your past experience of being full and being too full and feeling, you know, heavy and unproductive after that. I mean, we're parsing this all pretty closely here, because you're offering this as sort of a new philosophy, a new approach
right.
to wisdom. So it bears careful thought, as philosophers do, to really take apart the components here. And if you're saying that, you know, we're following our desires, our impulses to move, I'm thinking, I don't, you know, in the moment of eating something that's really delicious and right in the sweet spot of what we love, are you really just bringing your mind to bear in a different way? What would you say?
Great question, because I don't want to dump the mind or mm-hmm. ignore the mind or say that our mind is not important. On the contrary, I feel like our mind is most powerful when we understand its limits and its strengths and how our mind is actually a part of our bodies, that in order to be able to think the way we think and think those thoughts that we think, our hearts need to be beating, our bodies need to be breathing, we need to have food and energy within us, that in some ways our mind is actually an expression of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say our bodies, I want to be able to evoke this whole in which we are producing this sense of ourselves as producing both our thinking and our feeling and our acting. So that would be one thing. And so then the next thing would be that, yes, as we try to attune to our bodies, we're actually using our minds in a new way. We're focusing our attention on our sensations as a source of information for us. There are lots of other sources of information. We'll still need to read about nutrition, and we'll still need to study the different kinds of knowledge that are being produced in science, in the sciences and medical communities, for example. But that all becomes information that is then combined with what it is that we're getting from our senses. So we don't, in other words, so that we're not always looking outside of ourselves for the laws and formulas to impose upon ourselves, but that we're actually using the information that comes from outside and the information that comes from inside in together to come up with a strategy mm-hmm. for responding, for acting in that moment that honors our full selves.
Well, as
that
you
honors our particular selves and our full selves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as you mentioned in your book, it hardly a week goes by that you don't find something in the New York Times that relates to this whole issue of
yes.
of desire and the very topics that you've written about. I'd be interested in your response to, and perhaps you saw it, a recent article just last week in the New York Times called Personal Best, How or When
yes.
to Listen to Your Body. You
yes,
may have
Gina Collada's article.
Yeah, you may have read there. There were a number of quotes. Two were of particular interest to me in thinking about your book, one by a gentleman named Asger Jukendrup, the director of Human Performance Laboratory at the University of Birmingham in England and an Ironman triathlete. You know,
yes.
he talked about the need to listen to our bodies, but he said it's hard and not
yes.
everyone can do it. And then he was followed up by another gentleman, Tom Fleming, who's won the New York City Marathon twice and has coached a lot of nationally ranked runners. And he comments on how hard it is to decide as a runner, as an athlete, to listen to your body and know when to slow down and when to rest and when to push hard and through the discomfort and the pain. And then he gave this quote, and I'd appreciate your response to it. He says, "I never listened to my body," he said. "Maybe I should have, so let's get that clear right off. I think it's an impossible task." And when he was training, Mr. Fleming said he couldn't train less or make himself go more slowly. And he added, "If you really listen to your body, you won't achieve what you're capable of." And he advocates that voice outside of you, the coach, to help you sort through and gain the real wisdom in doing what you need to do in order to train for a marathon. So how would you respond?
Right. Well, first, that it is a process of discernment. And we, as we know, in any aspect of our lives, discernment takes practice. And it takes attention, and it develops over a period of time. So it isn't something that we can just immediately snap our fingers and know. So it's a process of discernment. And even if you are a marathon runner and you say you're not listening to your body, there's a certain degree to which that, with all due respect, can't be true, because you need to be honoring the physiology of your body to a minimal amount to be able to run the race. So the question then becomes, you sort of have a general sense of, I'm working with my body to be able to find the possibilities that my body has, to unfold its potential to achieve in these different areas. And how do I do that in ways which actually align with those capacities that are folded up inside of me? So in that sense, I think it is important to have inspiration, to have encouragement, to be able to look around you and see the kinds of things that are possible, the kinds of things that other people are doing. And I think it's also really important to develop this capacity of discernment within yourself so that you can sense which kind of pain is actually a pain that is going to cause an injury that is going to force you to stop, and which kind of pain is a kind of developmental pain of working with and through the particular patterns of movement that you've already created.
So would you disagree with these coaches that, that you can figure all that out without?
Yes, I would say you can figure all that out, and I would say that the best coach is one who actually helps you figure that out, who helps you work with your body to find out what is it that you, as an individual, need to do in order to be able to unfold your potential. I would suggest that, you know, what a swimmer needs versus what a runner needs and what a distance runner needs versus what a sprinter needs are going to be different for unfolding the potentials in those different directions, and what one person needs versus what another person needs are also going to be different, given the different physiology, different metabolism, different personality. So I think that also is a process in which practicing a certain kind of discernment of your own bodily sensations is important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, the practice of listening is so important, and I do find, though, that a lot of times we have such conflicting desires with such disappointing outcomes. You know, I think a lot of people really relate to what the Apostle Paul said in the Bible. You know, the good I want to do, I don't do. And the thing I don't want to do, that I do. So maybe when we come back from this next break, you could shed a little light on, you know, how that experience, which is so common to us all, kind of fits within your paradigm.
Oh, I'd love to.
Let's do that. Okay, well, this is Rick Davis.
And Leah Larrington.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, and we'll be back in a minute.
Alonzo Highsmith talks about the new Kid Care.
A lot of the kids, these kids are in unfortunate situations, and a lot of kids don't eat 3 square meals a day. And Kid Care is a way for these children to get a head start for school and for every endeavor they do outside of school and their activities.
The future is in our children's hands.
Kids are a key to a future that we're never going to see. A lot of these children are the key to our civilization in the future, and their future leaders, future business leaders, future athletic stars, future politicians. Maybe one of them will be president.
Help us lay the foundation today with your generous donation.
Everybody needs a foundation, and unless you have a foundation, it's hard to be successful.
Visit online at thenewkidcare.com or call us toll-free at 713-695-5437.
I'm Alonzo Highsmith, and I hope all of you will take the time to learn and find out about the New Kid Care.
Okay, we're back on The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about the most important questions of life.
Okay, and before the break, we were talking with our guest, Kimmerer LaMotte, about her book, What a Body Knows, Finding Wisdom in Desire. And if we listen to our bodies carefully and with discernment and with enough practice, we can find the underlying wisdom that our impulses to move are communicating and how they're shaping our lives and the way we think and live and move. So, Kimmer, I wanted to ask you, so many people relate, as we said before the break, to the Apostle Paul in the Bible, who says, the thing that I don't want to do, I do. And the thing that I do, I often don't want to do. And he's
right.
Very frustrated. And he said, you know, it's totally beyond me. I need deliverance from another source. And he finds that deliverance in a supernatural power through
right.
his faith in Christ. How would you say that this common experience to all of us can be answered within the paradigm that you're trying to offer?
Yes. First of all, I do want to affirm that our desires often conflict, and that part of what the practice of learning to discern the wisdom in them involves is being able to sit with our sensations of discomfort, just like Paul does, to be able to feel that conflict, to feel the discomfort, and to be able to try to sense what it is that discomfort is teaching us. So, I mean, in Paul's case, that discomfort was helping him sharpen his awareness of what he wanted in a way that enabled him to move in ways that were going to make that possible. I mean, he was suffering that sense of conflict.
Yeah.
He didn't want to feel that he didn't or couldn't do what he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And so he used that. He was honest with that feeling. He didn't wish it away.
Uh-huh.
He allowed it to move him towards Christ in that sense in a way that would enable him to find the deliverance that he needed. And I would suggest that his experience of Christ in as he recounts it in the New Testament is very much a bodily experience. I think that's one of the beautiful things about Christianity is that it really involves a personal relationship with God. It really involves being able to honor and understand that our bodies are temples, that God lives inside of our bodies, and this is actually where I want to connect with the ways in which Christianity has shaped me, and to try to figure out, you know, if we're saying that the thing that matters most in life is love, how do we live that love in relationship to these created bodies that we are?
I have to say that it's so, it's like there's a soundtrack of love playing in the background as you.
I know.
As
this
you,
is better than
as
having
you
a
have
little,
your little baby with
I
you
know, we
this
have,
morning.
We have two guests on the show
yes.
this week. We have Kimmerer
LaMotte
and Leaf. Yes,
yeah.
Who is sitting in the
who's
lap of our
who's just cooing
guest.
And being
is,
all loved in
this
the
is
background.
This is a whole new genre
yes.
in radio. I love it. It's the beginning
yeah.
of a great new thing.
Yeah. You know, Kimmer, it's interesting that you mention your, you know, the impact of Christianity on you in the interview. I, you know, one thing that struck me was, like, in thinking about your paradigm and what you were calling people to and what I read Paul people calling to is Paul is saying, it is not within me to live according to my own desires, no matter how carefully I tune myself to them and listen to their wisdom. I need mm-hmm. deliverance from the outside. I didn't really get that from your book as much as I got from your book that if we listen hard enough and attend hard enough and practice hard enough and breathe and do these things, we can meet our own desires. And I see that as a real fundamental difference in your approaches. Would you agree?
Well, I think that there are ways in which, and I developed this in the Desire for Spirit part, that there are ways in which Christianity in the modern period has developed a sense of itself as being about the right belief, that we actually, that the answers do come to us from outside of ourselves, and that we need to allow those words and the truth of that word to sort of enter into our eyes, our ears, and implant itself in our heart, and that transforms our actions. And I feel that that is definitely a part of Christianity, and it's a really powerful model of spirituality. And I think that there are also other models of spirituality that are in the Bible and that are in Christian tradition that in some ways haven't been as prevalent in the modern period because this notion of the word and of the external beliefs sort of is supported by so many aspects of modern life. That's a big thing that we could go into.
Uh-huh.
But part of what I want to help people see is that actually there are answers inside of us and outside of us, and that when we're feeling these particular conflicts and issues with our issues about what to do in our lives, that there's a way in which we also need to look inside of ourselves to the created humans we are to find out, what is our potential? You know, am I an oak tree or am I a daffodil? You know, what is it that I need to grow? What is it that I need to unfold my created potential? And that won't come to us necessarily from, or you get to a point where outside and inside start to blur because we realize that our bodies in movement, as movement, are connected with this whole created world of which we're a part, and that that energy and that spirit, I guess I would say, are flowing through us. And so that our senses and our internal awareness and our external awareness become sort of dual resources that we have for negotiating the kinds of challenges that come to us in our lives.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, Kimmerer. I'm really am following you on what you've just said.
Yeah.
Now, however, Kimmerer, aren't there feelings of discomfort? You used that phrase a little while ago. You talked about Paul sitting, you know, being comfortable, whatever, experiencing those and being okay with being in discomfort and trying to see what that's telling him or telling us. But
But
can we presuppose that there is a solution? For example, aren't there feelings of discomfort for which we may not be able to find a movement, I'm using your term there, a movement that will alleviate our discomfort? And here's one example.
Yeah.
I would cite, for example, the despairing existential philosophers, like, for example, Jean-Paul Sartre, who could find no meaning for life, that put him in a mood of great despair for most of his life. Now, as a recovering existentialist, I was in that trap until I was age 30. I was as miserable as Sartre. I'm telling you, I'm 56.
Right.
I was in a horrible place. So I understand. When I read his writings, I totally get it.
Right.
He wants to find a way out and cannot find it. Nothing to relieve his despair. So for him, that solution to his discomfort wasn't available as hard as he may try. So my question is, are there feelings of discomfort for which there really isn't any relief?
I would say that you can look at particular lives and you can see that people have gotten stuck in particular places. And that particular place in which Sartre got stuck, he also was able to create out of in a way that had very powerful effects. Now, it's not a way that I would endorse, but part of my own wrestling with the kind of despair and alienation that Sartre was wrestling with led me to believe that my mind doesn't actually know all the answers, and I can't figure out all the answers, and it's not going to come to me in a philosophical statement or formula that I can be able to justify to the rest of the world, but that actually some of my most powerful sort of resources for moving in my life and for creating the meaning of my life, or for participating in the creation of that meaning, I should really say, come when I actually allow myself not to be focused on finding the right answer, but allow myself to experience the power of movement in my own body.
Well, okay. However, let me compare. So I can tell now from what you just said that you have wrestled. Some people seem spiritually indifferent. I can now tell
right.
that you're definitely not. Perhaps
right.
that should have been a foregone conclusion.
Part of what might help to explain my perspective on this would just be to go back to how I was raised and the issues which actually led me to do a doctorate in the study of theology. Because as I was growing up, I was raised in sort of mainstream Protestant denomination churches, and I enjoyed my experience there very much. But it was when I started to dance and when I started to discover myself as a dancer that I started having the experiences that I thought I was supposed to be having in church. And it was this sort of disconnect for me that between this dancing that I was doing not in church and the experiences that I was having in church that led me to formulate this question, which was, why don't these mainstream Protestant Christian denominations dance? Why don't Christians dance?
Mm.
And that was actually the question that impelled me to study religion and to study theology in the modern period to try to figure out how is it that we've evolved this way in our culture where we tend to think of religion and dancing or, you know, our spiritual experience and our bodily experiences as two different things that are oftentimes antagonistic to one another or even hostile to one another, so that our bodily experiences become a threat or a challenge or a temptation to our spiritual experience. And so part of what I'm trying to do in my work is actually unravel that so that our spiritual experiences can come to a sense of our spirituality as being grounded in our physicality.
Yeah, it seems a shame that you read the Old Testament and you see an incredible bandwidth of emotion. A lot of it really,
yes.
especially in David's Psalms, very ecstatic. And we know from the Old Testament
yes.
books that he danced before the Lord in abandon, in pure worship.
Yes.
And there
yes.
were, you know, the people back then that even his one of his wives despised him for doing that. And it's too bad that
right.
you know we haven't been able to preserve that through modernity and through you know the history of the church. And yet it is neat
right.
that whole tradition is being recovered and that they're an increasing.
Right.
There's just almost an explosive growth in dance troupes that that have a real worship. And that worship through dance that are in,
yes.
in churches and in all kinds of worship. You know, thinking
right.
about your desire for dance and your desire for movement and yet at one point the dance is over. It's so existential. The moment passes. You know, it's like C.S. Lewis saying, you know, those glimpses of joy that we experience a desire that maybe for transcendence or something that's, you know, like Frost says, nothing gold can say. We want the gold that stays. And
right.
we get glimpses of it in a beautifully choreographed dance. And
right.
I think it makes me think of Augustine, who says, I'm sure you've heard the quote, "You've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you."
Yes.
How do you respond
yes.
to his naming the object of our deepest desire and making it inclusive?
As in terms of naming it God.
Yeah.
Is that, yes. I feel that is a wonderful way in which he is being fully human. I feel like that part of what satisfies our desire for spirit is to be participating consciously in this process of naming those relationships, those connections, that we need in our lives to be fully human. And that naming that connection for God for him is a powerful thing. And I see that as the importance of faith, really, that the object of our faith is something that we can't prove through certain kinds of scientific or rational means, that we can't have access to other than through our, and here's where the existential piece comes in, right? through our own leap, through our own embrace of it as true for us. Like somebody can argue that something's true, but it won't necessarily be true unless we know it in our hearts, in our minds, in our bodies to be true for us. And so what is the, I mean, this is another way in which I've thought about my work is, how is it that something becomes true for us? How is it we allow ourselves to name our relationship to those forces, those realities that are enabling us to be in our lives? So that's what I see Augustine doing, and I feel like we all need to do that in our lives. We all need to make a similar claim, and we can't make the same claim that Augustine made. That's his faith. It won't be our faith. So we all need to be able to name in our own way the God that enables our heart to find its rest.
Do you think it's possible, and we just have about a minute here, do you think it's possible that a personal God has created all of us in his image and given us desires that none of us can ever satisfy, nor can any other human, because he wants those desires to be the very thing that draw us into a personal relationship with him, a relationship that he wants to grow as our desires
right.
drive us into an ever deeper intimacy.
Mm-hmm. I feel like what you've just shared there is beautiful, and I feel like it is true, and I feel like there are also ways of expressing that that could be expressed somewhat differently, but that would have that same kind of resonance and in the sense that, here's where my philosopher sense, but what would it mean to be a personal God? And what is God then, as you're talking? And what is that creative, where is that creative force in the universe? And how do we feel it? How do we access it? How do we participate in it? And this is very much what I feel like I'm trying to open up in my work, is ways of thinking about these things which allow us to, as you say, embrace those desires, those discomforts, those satisfactions, as guiding us to a deeper connection with what it is that's creating us, and in ways that enable us to name that and to unfold and to become the people that we are.
Yeah. Well, we're so out of time, so we have to say thank you here, but we do appreciate your being with us today. Our guest, Kimmerer Lamote, What a Body Knows, Finding Wisdom in Desire is her book, and we thank you from Speaking of the Heart of a Dancer and a Philosopher and one who is trying to help people really sort through those conflicts of desires and living in a way that really does take us where we want to go in terms of love and relationships and nurturing and focusing on sort of an interesting, different approach to it, one that I wish we had more time to talk about. But thank you for being with us, Kimmerer.
Kimmerer, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
This is Rick Davis, host of The Things That Matter Most. Thanks for listening to our show. Do you have trouble remembering to tune us in on Sunday mornings at 9? Well, the pressure's off because we have three ways to help. You can go to our website, thethingsthatmattermost.org, where all our past shows are archived. While you're at our site, you can sign up for a weekly email reminder to tune into our next week's guest or hot topic. Finally, you can also sign up for an automatic download on iTunes. So without any effort, you'll always have the latest show on your iPod. So, archived shows, email reminders, and iPod subscriptions. Three ways to get our broadcasts if you miss us on Sunday morning. Thanks for listening.
We live so distracted from the things that matter most. Why is that? In an age glutted with images, we need a refreshed, renewed imagination for God. The premise of Leah Larrington's new book, God's Sight, is simple. If we don't enjoy God as much or more than our other relationships, it's because we don't see Him as He really is. God's Sight invites the reader to imagine God and His kingdom as the Bible describes them. God's Sight is available at Christian and online bookstores, as well as Lael's website, leahlarrington.com.
Okay, very interesting interview. Lael, what are your comments?
Well, you know, Rick, as I was reading the book, this is a book written by a dancer that's very focused on movement. And, you know, when she gets stuck, she just bundles up and goes and takes a walk on her farm and gets out in nature and enjoys nature. And that kind of moves her desires beyond that stuck point. And I couldn't help but think, I mean, I'm doing better physically now, but for many of the past 29 years, I really have experienced life as needing to be the mind over the body, because my body with rheumatoid arthritis has been so uncooperative. And it really has driven home to me the point that we are created in the image of a God who is a spirit, and that internal immaterial part of us is, you know, is the real essence of who we are. And we're clothed in flesh, and I'm grateful every day that one day I'll be clothed in new flesh, new improved flesh. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, someone who reads her book and its emphasis on movement and discerning desire through movement and getting unstuck through movement, that she would need to take into account how her way of wisdom speaks to the very young and the very weak, and how this approach to knowledge grounded in movement would be helpful to those who are physically very limited in movement. I find that when I'm stuck, it's not a physical way out of doing a dance or taking a very brisk walk. I've been forced to just to turn to God and to pray and really thinking, just like Paul, that ultimately it's all those other desires that do lead us to Him. So maybe in some ways my physical limitations have been a shortcut. I do find that God really speaks through, you know, as we turn to Him in prayer and nurture that intimacy and relationship.
Well, that wraps up another show, and we're getting ready to go into another busy week. And all of us have lots of things to keep our minds entirely occupied, but it's the kinds of questions that we ask on this show that in the end are going to be the most important. So let's not get so busy this week that we don't take time to think about the things that matter most.